You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Welcome, dear kinswomen and kinsmen. It's wonderful to be with you again this week. As always, I love speaking with you and to you. I hope that you've been enjoying the shows and that you are doing your investigation into the Apostle Paul as I am. I did a Word of the Most High show, which I haven't done one for a long time. And it was on the ever-changing testimony of Paul. And it was quite startling to me to see the differences of the testimony and see how the testimony modified as it went along. I was, as I did that presentation, I mocked the Apostle Paul, as the Jew is when he was on the top of the mountain. He was saying how he's going to kill all, get all the disciples and kill them and everything. And then when he was on the ground, he was a sniveling little rat-faced Jew. And maybe that was bad taste. I don't know. Maybe I should go and remove that or something. I don't know. But neither here nor there. It was quite an interesting look at these three different testimonies. I'm kind of shocked, really, because they were really different in many ways. Not good, So, here we are again, and we're going to look into the Be Wise as Serpents document, and we're on page 95. And we'll start here. Masons have looked forward to the Jewish goal of rebuilding the Jewish temple. It is a theme repeatedly pushed in the Masonic temples. An example of this is the Scottish Rite article by 33-degree Mason Charles L. Bashtel, entitled, "Where is King Solomon's Temple?" Until the arrival of the day when the temple is located and reconstructed for the use of all mankind, we should carry the symbol of the temple in our hearts. Can you imagine? Now, there is not supposed to be any third temple built in Scripture. This is something that's created. Jewish participation within the early Masonic Lodge. Because there has been such a powerful cover-up of the role Jews have played in Freemasonry, this subject must be dealt with. The Reformed rabbi Gotthold Salomon wrote that Freemasonry was more a Jewish movement in origin than Christian. I hope you're listening. However, as is so often the case today, Jews can say things about themselves which, if Gentiles, the goy, he uses these terms, these terms are bogus, say the same thing. Then the non-Jews are in serious trouble. The initial formation, so let's get that again, in origin. However, as it is so often the case today, Jews can say things about themselves, but when we say things, that's what it's saying, when we say the same thing, then we are in trouble. The initial formation by four Masonic lodges in 1717 of the first public Grand Lodge, and this was England, of course, included several Jewish Masons as participants. These were Marano Jews, Jews converted to Christianity. Yeah. And included Mendez, pay attention to the names. Remember what I told you about South America, the names? You see these names with EZ and everything at the end? Listen. And included Mendez, Di Medina, Alvarez, and Baruch. In other words, Jews were there from the start. A look at the seals of the various Masonic groups in England in the 18th century reveals a Jewish or magical influence. Many books, including Morey's recent one, portray the American lodges as anti-Jewish. This is a smokescreen. I'd pay attention right now if I were you. The only Grand Lodge that was really anti-Jewish was the Prussian Grand Lodge, which eventually transformed itself into the Thule Society and then into the Nazi Party. Here we are again. The reason that the Prussian lodges became concerned in the early 19th century about Jewish control of Freemasonry could be a book in itself, but was based on several items. Number one, being close to the several radical Jewish movements in Poland and the German states. The Germans were more aware of what was taking place. In Germany, warnings were given by ex-Masons and Masons. German authors like Johann Christian Ehrman in 1816, Edward Emil Eckert, Der Freimaurer Orden in seiner wahren Bedeutung, 1850, and George Michael Pachtler, to name a few, wrote books warning the Germans about Freemasonry and the power of Jews within the lodges. A close examination by reliable Masonic Jewish and other sources reveals that the Jews have indeed played an important part in the Masonic lodges since their beginning. A person today will witness, for instance, such things as the Feast of Tishri, observed by, for instance, the Arkansas Lodge of Perfection. Secret dens of anti-Christianity. The first early lodges in the various European nations of Scotland, England, German states, and France built upon a number of existing organizations. Various secret societies were built upon, although it is beyond the scope of this chapter to explain Masonry's early history. It will be found in the Knights Templar groups, in the secret societies of Europe, and the Middle East, including the order called Rashania, the Assassins, and Sufism, you know, the Sufis, the Rosicrucians, the Prière de Zion, the mystery religions, including the evolution of the Mazdanes to Mithraism, to Manichaeism, to Freemasonry, witchcraft, and Platonic humanists and philosophers. Not only were the Masonic rites formed from the early secret societies, but the secrecy of the lodges encouraged and provided a forum for men of all types of anti-Christian persuasions, including but not limited to the Jews. John Robison, a Mason and a leading intellect of his day, exposed the conspiracy of Illuminized Masonry to take over the world and destroy Christianity in 1789. After decades of working closely with these men and listening to them in the lodges, he writes about the activities of these men. Although in direct opposition to a standing rule and a declaration made to every newly received brother that nothing touching the religion or government shall ever be spoken of in the lodge. But the lodges in other countries quickly followed the example of France and have frequently become the rendezvous of innovators in religion and politics, and other disturbers of the public peace. In short, I have found that the covert of a Mason lodge, why doesn't he say Masonic lodge, had been employed in every country for venting and propagating sentiments in religion and politics that could not have been circulated in public without exposing the author to great danger. I found that this impunity, freedom due to Masonry's secrecy, had gradually encouraged men of licentious principles to become more bold and to teach doctrines subversive of all of our notions of morality. Under the protection of Masonic secrecy, they planned schemes. They formed associations in opposition to the superstitions of the church. The church dreaded the consequences and endeavored to suppress the lodges. You know, I wanted to say something about the lodges. Have you ever, you notice that there's a term that they use, that you could get something lodged in your eye, or, you know, it's not a good thing. It's something that is like a thorn. A thorn could be lodged into your skin. See how the word lodge, it's very interesting that they would even use that term. Because usually it's a splinter lodged in your finger or whatever. It's something you don't want there. It's something that's not good there. It's causing problems. Isn't that interesting? So, okay, so it says, but in vain, the rigors of the church only served, I think that's supposed to mean, to knit the brethren, Masonic brethren, more firmly together. That's what it did, was. The lodges became schools of skepticism and infidelity in the spirit of conversion or proselytism to spread Masonic dogma grew every day stronger. Robeson found in his attendance of the Masonic meetings that even some of the church officials, like the Prince Bishop of Liege at the Lodge de la Parfaite Intelligence, mocked and attacked the church in his talks given at the Masonic Lodge, and this while many of the other lodge members were dignitaries in the church. This type of thing is still continuing. Today, some of the most important Christian ministers who are Masons have only contempt for Christianity once they have the lodge's secrecy to talk. The Standard Jewish Encyclopedia states, early European Jewish settlers in the U.S. were amongst the most enthusiastic Masons. Listen again. The Standard Jewish Encyclopedia states, early European Jewish settlers in the U.S. were among the most enthusiastic Masons, and the first lodge in Newport, Rhode Island, was established by them. Indeed, the St. John's Lodge of Newport was one of the first lodges in the colonies. Charleston, South Carolina, became a capital, or a nerve center, of Freemasonry for a number of reasons. The city of Charleston, South Carolina, had the largest Jewish population of any U.S. city in 1800. It was also an early strong point for the Unitarian Church, whose congregation originated in Charleston in 1772. Further, Charleston was a cosmopolitan commercial center with strong French ties. The Rite of Perfection came from France to Charleston via the West Indies. The Scottish Rite's sublime Grand Lodge of Perfection was created in Charleston in 1783. Also, the Order of Palladium, the Palladium Rite of Paladin, remember? And it had been started soon after 1730 in Charleston. The significance of this last point will be seen later. So, early America had already had bad things lodged into it, you see. Which is too bad, because I don't like how America has turned out. And I don't think any of you do either. All that done for this ending. You know what I mean? It's become ugly, what we've done to the world. I mean, it's not us. We know who's doing it. We know who's controlling America. And it's just not nice, that's all. One of the original founders of the Mother Supreme Council Scottish Rite at Charleston, South Carolina, was Abraham Alexander. Abraham Alexander was a Kazan reader for the Bay Elohim Jewish congregation and later a rabbi. Another Jew involved in founding the Scottish Rite at Charleston was Moses C. Levy. He was a man of great learning who became the president of the Bay Elohim congregation. The inspector general appointed by the Grand Consistory of Princes of the Royal Secret to oversee masonry in the British colonies in the New World was Stephen Morin, a Jew. And by the way, there's a name there. You want to just keep an eye on that name, Morin, a Jew. Morin was joined by the Jewish Mason Moses M. Hayes in Jamaica. Moses M. Hayes established the Sublime Lodge of Perfection in Boston, Mass. The Jewish Mason Abraham da Costa, pay attention to that name. The Jewish Mason Abraham da Costa worked with Morin to establish masonry in Charleston, South Carolina. They set up the King Solomon Lodge. Morin forged Frederick the Great's signature on his Masonic documents to gain credibility. Another Jewish Mason, Isaac da Costa, in 1758, working with Moses M. Hayes, established the St. Andrew Lodge in Boston and helped out the South Carolina da Costa. And he helped establish the Charleston Lodge of Perfection and served as one of its grand masters. Joseph M. Myers, another Jewish Mason, was his successor. Okay, that name is Meyers. The Jew Moses Cohen, who was originally initiated into masonry in Philadelphia, was one of the first members of the Mother Lodge in Charleston. So, you know what I mean? This is just, it's crazy that this is how America started out. I mean, this is very early, you know? And you see that this grand experiment was set up to fail. From the two mother lodges in Boston and Charleston, South Carolina, came many of the Scottish Rite lodges. Charleston, South Carolina would also be known as the cradle of Reformed Judaism. Interestingly, the Jew Isaac Harby, who fathered Reformed Judaism in Charleston, is called Pallas Athena. Reformed Judaism. Very interesting. The Jew Isaac Harby, H-A-R-B-Y, who fathered Reformed Judaism in Charleston, is called Pallas Athena. In the Jewish author Max DeMont's book, The Jews in America, Scheiman and Schuster, 1978, page 93, the significance of this will be discussed soon. And Charleston, South Carolina would be the place the Civil War conflict began. Wow. Get it? See, wherever the Jews and the Freemasons are, that's where the revolutions start. And these Jewish revolutions are exactly what I'm saying. It was a Jewish revolution to start a civil war in America. As you know, the Rothschild fellow there wanted to have his two sons come over here and take the North and the other take the South. They wanted to split it into two factions. And they certainly did a good job in splitting it, even though they didn't split it literally. They split it in the hearts of men, because the people of the South still look at people in the North as Yankees. So the division may not be on the map, but the division is in the hearts of the people. Of course, I don't feel any of that division. I never did. But the people of the South feel it heavily. There's a resentment. So, One other prominent Jewish founder of the Mother Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite was Israel de Lieben. Sounds German, doesn't he? A prosperous Jewish merchant. And yet another Masonic merchant who participated in establishing the Mother Supreme Lodge, believed to be Jewish and having a monopoly on the world's indigo, which is purple dye, trade, was Moses Lindo. See how a lot of these names, I mean, if it wasn't for the first name, just say his name was Al Lindo. You would never even know, right? Summary of Jewish founders of the Mother Supreme Lodge. So far, we have mentioned a few of those Jewish Masons who were involved with the founding of the Mother Supreme Lodge in Charleston, South Carolina. There were other Jewish Masons: Abraham Alexander, Abraham da Costa, Isaac da Costa, Moses Cohen, Moses C. Levy, Israel de Lieben, Moses Lindo, Joseph M. Myers, and last but not least, Stephen Morin. This explains why this author slightly winces when he hears the often said remark that the Jews had nothing to do with early Freemasonry. Yeah. It must have been a Jew that first said that, right? A quick overview of the 11 founders of the Supreme Council. How many founders were of the Supreme Council? Why, the number 11 again. 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite, Rabbi Abraham Alexander, 33 degree Jewish. Emmanuel de la Motta, 33 degree Jewish, M-O-T-T-A. Israel de Lieben, 33 Jewish, 33 degrees. Moses Levy, 33 degree Jewish. Dr. Isaac Auld, A-U-L-D, Presbyterian, 33 degrees. Dr. Frederick Dalko, Episcopalian, 33 degrees. Dr. James Moultrie, 33 degrees, Scott, who studied at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland. De Grasse, 33 degrees, French aristocrat, active with the Grand Orient Masonry. Jean B. de la Hogue, 33 degree Frenchman. Mitchell and Bowen, both 33 degrees, two men born in Ireland. Hezekiah Levy, a Jewish Mason, was one of the earliest members of the Fredericksburg Lodge No. 4, to which President George Washington would join. Jews played prominent roles in the lodges in America and Europe. For instance, the English Grand Lodge's coat of arms was designed by the Jewish Mason J.J. Leon Templo. In 1717, would you guess that that was a Jew name? I wouldn't. In 1717, when Anderson's Constitution began to be drawn up, the Constitution not only included parts of Egyptian and Pythagorean thought, but also included the two pillars, Jachin and Boaz, which derive from the Jewish rabbinical tradition concerning Solomon's Temple. The German Jewish Mason Moses Mendelssohn, 1729 to 1796, was a friend of the Mason philosopher Kant, and was himself a very famous philosopher. He has been called the German Socrates, quote-unquote. He wrote a metaphysical book, Abhandlung über die Evidenz in den Metaphysiken, Wissenschaften. Another Jewish Mason, Karl L. Reinhold, was also a philosopher and friend of Kant. He published letters on the philosophy of Kant and the book The Hebrew Mysteries, or the Oldest Religious Freemasonry. This latter book explains that Moses got his religious system from the Egyptians and that Freemasonry derives from that lineage. Remember that Moses practiced magic. I don't believe Moses practiced magic, but okay, we scroll down a little bit. Many of the lectures of the Sublime Degrees contain an epitome of the arts and sciences, and in their history, many valuable and important facts are recorded, obtained from authentic archives in the possession of our society, and which, from the manner of their communication, can never be mutilated or corrupted. This is an object of the first magnitude in a society whose principles and practices should be invariable. Much variety and irregularity has unfortunately crept into the blue degrees in consequence of the want of Masonic knowledge in many of those who preside over their meetings, and it is particularly so with those who are acquainted with the Hebrew language in which all the words and passwords are given. So essentially, necessary it is for a man of science to preside over lodges that much inquiry may arise from the smallest deviation in the ceremony of initiation or in the lectures of instruction. We read in the book of Judges that the transposition of a single point over the Shbeez, S-B-E-E-Z, I don't know what that is, in consequence of a national defect among the Ephraimites designed the Cowans and led to the slaughter of 42,000. The sublime figure of the divinity formed in the fellow crafts degree can be elegantly illustrated only by those who possess some knowledge of the Talmud. Most of the words in the sublime degrees are derived from the Chaldean Hebrew and Latin languages. So I'm going to move forward a little bit. A New York Jewish Mason, Haim Salomon, 1740 to 1785, now you should recognize that name, helped finance the American Revolution. That's why you should recognize it, for the Americans. And it was noted to have given financial aid to many of the revolutionary leaders, including Jefferson, Madison, and Randolph. Arrested by the British, he somehow got free and escaped to American lines. While the Jewish Mason Salomon financed the Americans, the Jewish family of the Rothschilds, who participated in secret societies, were making large sums of money from the American Revolution due to their banking arrangements with the Elector of Hesse, who rented German troops to the German-British monarch to fight the Americans. Incredible. One of the early powerful Freemasons, a very famous Jewish Mason born in Boston to descendants of the Puritan tradition, is Benjamin Franklin. Wow. Now, I had said that I believed that Benjamin Franklin was Jewish. Now, I haven't read this, but I think it's interesting. I've never heard anyone actually say it before, but let's listen to what he says. A very famous Jewish Mason born in Boston to descendants of the Puritan tradition is Benjamin Franklin. His father and mother were Josiah and Abiah Franklin. Benjamin Franklin contributed to the Mikveh Israel Jewish congregation in Philadelphia, but Franklin did not practice Judaism. Oh, I see. That's going to stop him from having the Jewish problem in his blood. He did practice the occult and things that would be weird to Christians. He became the head of the very occultic Grand Orient Freemasons when he was in France. Franklin's life was surrounded by Freemasons. Franklin's role in the establishment and promotion of Freemasonry is overwhelming. His role in the destruction of Christianity is quite unknown. Wow. Franklin's career as a Freemason is shrouded in mystery. This author has in his library the somewhat rare book, Benjamin Franklin as a Freemason, by Julius Sash. J.F. Sash is the last of a line of Sashes in the world order. This leading Masonic scholar writes, "To write the history of Franklin as a Freemason is virtually to chronicle the early Masonic history of America. A great difficulty, however, here confronts us. Notwithstanding the prominence of Franklin in Pennsylvania Freemasonry, strange as it appears, he does not mention a word of his Masonic connections or career in his autobiography or in any of his correspondence, with but two exceptions. So far as known, this omission is more remarkable when we look at his Masonic career while in France during the later years of his life. There his activity and intimacy with the brethren was intimate and close, both personal and official, Franklin taking an active part in their proceedings, even advancing the so-called higher degrees, to the so-called. So he was advancing in the degrees, Gnosticism, you see. In spite of all his many duties, Benjamin Franklin was never absent from a Masonic meeting. The Masonic Lodge played such a big role in Franklin's life, and yet Franklin never even hints about Freemasonry in his autobiography. The editor of his autobiography points out that Franklin tried to portray an unreal persona in his autobiography. That's very Jewish. But one that Franklin felt people would want to emulate. If Masonry is so virtuous, one wonders why it plays no role in his autobiography, which was written on purpose to create an image worthy of emulation. Very interesting, ladies and gentlemen, very interesting, wouldn't you say? Benjamin Franklin was the founder of the American Philosophical Society. He was also a Rosicrucian. In February 1730, it appears he was initiated into St. John's Lodge of Philadelphia. And in 1727, he started the secret revolutionary political society called the Leather Apron Club, which changed its name in 1731 to Junto. That's J-U-N-T-O. I don't know if it's Juntu or Junto. And took on the appearance of being a literary society. The same year that this literary, quote-unquote, society, alleged literary society, changed its name, the St. John's Masonic Lodge that Franklin belonged to got in touch with the Grand Lodge of London, whose Grand Master, the Duke of Norfolk, appointed Daniel Cox. This is Cox with an E at the end, and we know that Cox is a Jewish name. I'm not going to say that there's no person out there named Cox that isn't Jewish, but we know that Cox, Wally Cox, and all these different... That's a Jewish name. So, interesting, just like the name Brown in America, in England, they add an E at the end. Well, same thing here. Daniel Cox advised the Masons when he arrived of a plan for the Federation of the Colonies. In 1754, while Deputy Grand Master Franklin unveiled at Albany, New York, to his brother Masons his plan to unite all the colonies under the one government, Albany was the site of one of the earliest Scottish Rite's Lodge of Perfection. Between January 21, 1769 and January 21, 1772, a series of inflammatory letters called the Letters of Junius, which were written in England, were circulated throughout the American colonies. The Letters of Junius. Never heard of it. The letters advanced those causes that the colonists would declare to be the causes of their revolution, human rights, freedom of the press, and taxation without representation. The letters were read by Franklin and many of the Masons who initiated the American Revolution. The man who wrote these letters, according to his niece, was the Reverend James Wilmot, 1726 to 1808. A Mason and rector of Barton-on-the-Heath in Warwickshire in 1785. He was also the first person to publicly name Bacon as the author of Shakespeare's works. He also apparently was in contact with the Lodge of Nine Sisters in France that Franklin would join in 1777. Historians have never ceased to wonder at the enormous physiological influence which Franklin exercised in colonial politics. But up to the present day, a few indeed are those who have realized that the source of his power lay in the secret societies to which he belonged and which he was appointed spokesman. Independence Hall, which became the famous center of the Revolution, was built by the Masons. It is believed by some that the Mason Benjamin Franklin laid its cornerstone. Others say it was another Freemason instead. My goodness. For more on the American Revolution, the Masons, and what the history books are lacking, see Chapter 3.4. Benjamin Franklin and Religion. Some of Franklin's Masonic brothers in France were impressed by the rituals, etc., that he thought up for a new religion. Turning our attention to a different aspect of Franklin's, in a statement of beliefs, Franklin states, listen carefully now, I conceive, then, that the infinite has created many beings or gods. Oh my goodness. It may be that these created gods are immortal, or it may be that after many ages they are changed, and others supply their places. Not only were Franklin's beliefs not Christian, but in the latter years of his life, all of the Christian standards were violated. So that's very Jewish, right? If all the Christian standards were violated, that's Jewish. Isn't it ironic that just last night, it was just yesterday, I was talking about Ben Franklin and the possibility of him being a Jew because of the name Frank. I know that the name Frank, like Billy Frank, you know, who is that famous Billy Graham. And we've heard of Otto Frank and all different Jews, right? So I thought yesterday, I'm thinking Benjamin. Benjamin Franklin. Very possible this fellow's a Jew. Interesting. So again, not only were Franklin's beliefs not Christian, but in the latter years of his life or later years of his life, all of the Christian standards were violated, so that it is really a travesty of honest reporting that Franklin is held up by so many as a role model for Protestants. The distortions in the popular history books about Franklin are but a microcosm of the distortions that history books in general suffer from. Now, let me make another comment about this. This is why I keep telling you to worship the Father, have a relationship with the Father. Do not worship men or institutions. This is a great example of it right here. Now, I don't worship Ben Franklin and never did. But he certainly did get a lot of press, didn't he? And I think we're starting to see some of the reasons why. Franklin's mother's concern. His mother was very concerned that he had joined the Freemasons and strongly objected. In diplomatic double talk, he advised her not to worry about that, what she didn't know about. As to the Freemasons, unless she will believe me when I assure her that they are in general a very harmless sort of people and have no principles or practices that are inconsistent with religion or good manners, I know no way of giving my mother a better opinion of them than she seems to have at the present. Since it is not allowed that women should be admitted into that secret society, I must entreat her to suspend judgment till she is better informed. To paraphrase, so, Mom, I can't tell you anything more, but don't judge until you're well informed about us. In other words, she'll never be well informed about them. The Rosicrucians. There have been numerous small groups of Rosicrucians of various kinds. The purpose stated by one of the principal Rosicrucian groups, please listen. The fraternity is now entirely devoted to philosophical research, spiritual training, and occult initiation. The famous Jewish magician, Eliphas Levi, self-named Zahed, or Zahid, that's Z-A-H-E-D, I never heard that before, that's new, was the supreme grand master of the Rosicrucians in 1861. Remember that Eliphas Levi, a Jew, is the one that made up the Baphomet thing. You'll see his name on it. When the next supreme grand master, the American Dr. P.B. Randolph, was chosen, Eliphas Levi was a deep student of the Kabbalah and wrote many books on magic, including the history of magic. His 1896 edition of Transcendental Magic carries a big illustration of the Star of David. But we know that's not the Star of David, right? What he means is that's the hexagram. That's not the Star of David at all. That's the star of his son, Solomon. One hostile biographer claimed that he charged up to 25 francs to give clients prophecies from Lucifer. Are you listening? This guy's just like Pike. Pike said he could just summon up Lucifer with no problem. And this fellow here, Eliphas Levi, listen to what he says. Again, one hostile biographer claimed he charged up to 25 francs to give clients prophecies from Lucifer. Lytton knew Levi. Lytton tried to establish a magic society in London, which Madame Blavatsky became acquainted with, another heavy-duty Luciferian, Jew, by the way. Magic, the Jewish Kabbalah, and Freemasonry are connected. Did you hear that? Remember, they want this to be the one-world religion. And remember that Albert Pike says that the Freemasonry is based on the Kabbalah. So it says right here, magic, the Jewish Kabbalah, and Freemasonry are connected. A large number of famous magicians, have been Jewish Freemasons. The Rosicrucian group had an order in which in England was called the Order of the Rose. In France, L'Ordre du Lys, and in America, the Order of the Lily. Now, that was, he's going to mention it here, Abraham Lincoln, right? He was a member of the Order of the Lily, which is a Rosicrucian group. During the Civil War, the Rosicrucian Council of Three of the Order, the Rosicrucian Council of Three of the Order of the Lily consisted of Paschal Beverly Randolph, General Ethan Allen Hitchcock, his mother was the Mason, Ethan Allen's daughter, and Abraham Lincoln. It is well known that Lincoln and his wife had seances, etc., in the White House. Abraham Lincoln's wife was especially into spiritism. Reverend Cole of the Church of Illumination writes in The Light of Life, Abraham Lincoln also received his training in the regeneration, in like manner, under the great teacher, Dr. P.B. Randolph. This helps solve the mystery about Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was never a Mason, but many lodges and individual Masons believed he was. Lincoln had been asked to join, but turned down the chance. A French Mason magazine, Monde Maconique, referred to Lincoln as a member of the Grand Lodge of New York. It appears from various reliable Masonic sources that Lincoln was not a Mason, but he was a Rosicrucian. The close affiliation between the two orders and the overlapping memberships would naturally tend to cloud the issue. During the Civil War, Randolph and Hitchcock, who were close friends, Dr. Alexander Wilder and Abraham Lincoln formed the nucleus of the Rosicrucians in Washington, D.C. Hitchcock, in a compilation of his notes, 50 Years in Camp and Field, alludes to their meetings with the president. Lincoln was the man the Rothschilds wanted, for his election provoked secession by the South. Their plans were to control Lincoln. He turned out to be a far greater man than people expected. Remember, Lincoln is a Jew. He was born by A.A. Springs, whose name was formerly Springsteen. Now, here we are, quickly. Time is flying. Let's take a break. I'm going to play my song called Wake Up, which is to be on the next album. And I used it on yesterday's show.
Wake up, you people, now wake up.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Saxon's Creed Radio Show, brought to you by DavidJamesBoston.com. Well, I wonder how interested in these subjects you are. Is this interesting to you to find out about Ben Franklin and find out about Lincoln and all these different things? Does it shake you to the foundation? See, my foundation was never in those people. I would rather you look to the Father. I would rather you not. You see what happens when you, if you were a Ben Franklin and you thought like he was a paramount of a man and you respected him to the highest limit, I mean, look how disappointed you'd be. This is why we don't want to worship men or institutions. The John Birch Society was started and funded by Jews. And at the time, Eustace didn't know, Eustace Mullins did not know those facts. And he was actually thrown out of the John Birch Society, which I think is very humorous. And it's because he told the truth and they didn't like it. I do think that's humorous, you know. And, you know, he told me about it. And I think it's very funny that, you know, when you think like, wow, the John Birch Society, here it is another institution. It isn't what you thought it was. Here's Ben Franklin. He isn't what you thought he was. But what they did was the press or the historian press, let's say, the rewriters of history, they always pick their heroes, right? So you look at somebody like General Sherman. Here's another example. Now, I believe that's a Jew because Sherman is a Jewish name. And he was the most evil, filthy thing I've seen. Well, not the most, but I mean, really, really evil. And what he did to our own people is just beyond measure. And of course, you see a picture of him. He's a hero in our country. And not to me. And he's got his hand in his shirt, you know, which he's revealing. He's also a Freemason. But nobody says he's a Jew, but nobody says Ben Franklin's a Jew. It's funny how I suspect these things. Another thing I've been meaning to look into is we always hear about Benedict Arnold as a traitor from those times, an American traitor. Now, I happen to know the name Arnold is a Jew name, but nobody mentions that Benedict Arnold is a Jew, and I haven't proven he's a Jew. I haven't even been able to look into it yet. If anybody knows about Benedict Arnold, maybe you can send me something on that. But I don't even know what he did, what traitorous action he did, because I never have studied into it. I'm sorry, white people. I'm one of those white people that doesn't know everything. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you had told me stories about Benedict Arnold, I wouldn't say, oh, yeah, I know all about that. I know all about everything. I'm white. So, you know, we're funny people that way. People hate to admit they don't know something. But I don't have any problem admitting I don't know about something. And, you know, I'll get around to studying it. I'm sure many people do know about Benedict Arnold and what he did as a traitorous act, what acts he did. But I don't think anyone's ever mentioned that he's a Jew. And I like I said, I'm not positive he's a Jew, but I would say that I suspect it highly, especially because he's treasonous. Never mind his name, his Jewish name. So why don't we continue here? And let me mention something about the Apostle Paul before I go on here. Because after I did that show, I thought of some things that were interesting. How he progressed with this thing, he gave himself more authority each time he told the testimony. And on the third time, he said that all that were with him fell to the ground. So they all saw this light and fell to the ground. But what I find very ironic is that only Paul was blinded. Now, don't you think that's a little odd? Somebody had to lead them back to Damascus. I understand that. But don't you think that's a little strange that only Paul was blinded? And I told you that I believe he faked his blindness. It's very questionable. You see, you have to realize that if Paul was faking the blindness, there wasn't going to be anybody there that was going to say, oh, let's check and see if he's lying. You see what I mean? They were just going to accept whatever this fellow said because he said he was chosen of of Jesus. It's bizarre. Really, it is bizarre. So, think what you will about that. I think it's very, very interesting. So let's get back to our book. We're on page 105. The Leadership of Rosicrucians. The leadership consists of a Grand Master and a Council of Three. Underneath this are a Council of Seven, a Council of Nine, and a Council of 21. Their priests are called priests of F, that's A-E-T-H, or priests of light. They have roundtable discussions, an order of chivalry, the Knights of the Holy Grail. They are associated with the Martinist order of Freemasonry. The AMORC, that's an acronym, the Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucius, AMORC, Group of Rosicrucians is a separate group from the Church of Illumination, and the AMORC Group of Rosicrucians, headquartered in San Jose, California, and Sussex, England. I know somebody that's from Sussex, England. That's very interesting. And it puts a cartouche on the odd number of pages of their Rosicrucian Digest. The three symbols represent following the bug, the people of the earth, the crown, the illuminated one, and the circle with its dot, the all-seeing eye. So, when you see Tarjay's symbol, I had told a former girlfriend of mine that that was an Illuminati symbol, and that it was the sexual union. It was the male and the female, the sons of God and the daughters of men, the point within a circle. She says, oh no, that's a target. See, she wasn't able to look at the sign and see that there's really only a dot and circle there, if you really look at it. Whatever color it's in, if it's a red dot, then it has the red circle. If it's a white dot, it has the white circle. You see, yeah, depending on which Tarjay you see. But you see the circle with its dot, it says here is the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. The same one on the dollar bill, you see. See how these they have many meanings for the same symbol? What then are the major differences between the Masons and this line of Rosicrucians? The Masonic lodges were known to the public and practiced symbolic ritual. The Rosicrucians were secret and were spiritual. Training is often given secretly, even in our day. And today there are numerous men receiving instructions from the Great Order unbeknown to their closest friends. This does not apply to AMORC, which is less secret. Masonry was a brotherhood introducing the occult, but not demanding any religious growth from the initiate, while the Rosicrucians have always linked spiritual growth to the progress of their initiates. Yes, as I said before, it's called soul science. That wasn't mentioned here, but maybe it will be. We'll see. At the time of the Revolution, the Council of Three consisted of Benjamin Franklin, George Clymer, and Thomas Paine. George Washington received his training in regeneration from Paul Ardenheim, the monk of Wissahickon. Thomas Jefferson was also a member of the order, as well as Lafayette, who was initiated in France prior to helping with the American Revolution. Later, British King Edward belonged to the Order of the Rose. A great mystery. There is a great man of history whose life was more mysterious than it was known. Or it says more mystery than it was known, but it has to be mysterious than it was known. But certain men, especially Alfred F. Dodd, have broken codes, have uncovered ancient overlooked letters and documents, and have analyzed and put multitudes of tiny pieces together so that the evidence is so great to be incontrovertible about to who this man really was. But it was not likely, you know, who I'm writing about, because Alfred Dodd's books with their evidence have been suppressed by the system. I am writing about an extraordinary genius, a great philosopher, a great orator, a great lawyer, and a man of great character, a man who was framed in his old age for a crime he was innocent of by a ruthless politician, a man who gathered the sciences together. Here we are. Shall we worship this man, do you think? Do you think that's a good idea? No. A man who gathered the sciences together under the Royal Society, a man who wrote the greatest works of English literature and proofread the King James Bible. Many of his incredible works of genius are known under his pen name of William Shakespeare. He conjectured ahead of his times that heat was energy in motion and that light travels very fast. He created the modern English language and is responsible for English replacing Latin in the English higher schools. He was of royal blood and proper heir to the throne of England. He also lived in an age when the shadow of the executioner's block haunted men. It was a day when the heads of those who displeased the queen were severed and put on public display. He would have lost his head for some of his works written under Shakespeare's name had the queen been able to identify who wrote the works. Therefore, he wrote much of his works under pseudonyms, and many of his works were published after his death. He concealed his royal identity. He concealed his leadership of the secret societies. He concealed the role he played in designing the plans and machinery for the creation of his vision of a new world. His mother, the queen, ruling when half of her people questioned her legitimacy, feared the repercussions if the truth of her secret marriage and two sons were revealed. Indeed, his mother, Queen Elizabeth I, had almost been beheaded by her own sister, and had watched the first man who she had romanced be beheaded by her father for him being so forward. He being too forward, but he missed the second O here. See, everybody, by the way, I'll just mention that, yeah, when I wrote the article there about the Apostle Paul, the study piece, I had put at the end of the article that I hadn't corrected it. And so I have this morning. I corrected it this morning. I mean, to the best of my abilities, you know. I'm sure if I look through it again, I could find something else, you know, because I'm not perfect in grammar or anything like that. We weren't taught properly in my day and age. We were taught better than the children are now. But I'm sure there are people from my day and age that can certainly have been taught English properly. I'm not bad at it, but I'm, you know, one of the ones that really cracked me up was I talked about how the Apostle Paul's gospel reigned supreme, and I put R-A-I-N. you know, because you're doing it so fast, you're not realizing it's R-E-I-G-H-N, whatever, R-E-I-G-N-S, you know, reigns supreme. But so I fixed it, but I thought that was humorous. I was laughing about it. But anyway, I did the best I could to correct that, and I'm sure that people that are more skilled in, you know, things like are being spoke of here would be able to do better than I. I just do the best I can, folks, and that's all I can do. So, she had watched baby heirs to the throne be killed. Such barbarism is forgotten, and the Elizabethan age seems now to be only full of glamour and the romance. It was difficult and dangerous times, even for the Queen of England. Who was this great man, Sir Francis Bacon, Viscount St. Alban? For over two decades, the leader of the British Parliament's House of Commons, and later in life, on January 30th, 1621, a member of the House of Lords, the secret first son of the secret marriage between Lord Robert Dudley and Elizabeth Tudor. A great birthday party. On 22nd January 1621, in honor of Sir Francis Bacon's 16th birthday, a select group of men assembled without fanfare for a great Masonic banquet. This Masonic banquet was to pay tribute to their leader, Sir Francis Bacon. Only those of the Rosy Cross, the Rosicrucians, and the Masons, who were already aware of Bacon's leadership role, were invited. Bacon's favorite perfumes had been used. The meeting was at the Great Hall at York House, England, now known as Whitehall. The tables were tea tables with gleaming white drapery and silver. Flowers decorated the Great Hall. A dear longtime friend of Bacon's, the famous English poet Ben Jonson, without an H, by the way, gave a Masonic ode to Bacon that day. Jonson once remarked something like, "I love the man, and do honor his memory above all others." First, Ben Jonson toasted his girlfriend. Next, one can picture this man with his strong face and long nose, and full, thick, and wavy hair. Well, I guess you get it. Another Jonson, right? And short, with three parentheses, and short mustache and beard as he read out his ode in English. On his ode. On Francis Bacon's 16th birthday, hail, happy genius of this ancient pile. How comes it all things so about thee smile? The fire, the wine, the men, and the midst. Thou stand'st as if some mystery thou didst. This ode goes by most of us today without being told the double meaning it had for those Masons of that day. Hail was a Masonic sign, a Masonic call. The word pile also meant spear in those days, an allusion to Francis Bacon's role as the happy genius who was Pallas Athena, the spear shaker. Athena. Pallas Athena, the spear shaker. Smiles referred to their fellowship in their brotherhood. The Masons would fire with their glasses, and the wine refers to their toasts that went along with their firing glasses. As their gathering was all male, it refers to the men, because Bacon was like a Christ figure. Ben uses wording in the midst. Finally, the word mystery is full of Masonic connotation. Sir Francis Bacon had revived the mysteries, which only his genius and deep scholarship could have done so well. The Masons print Bacon's diary years later. In 1625, Sir Francis Bacon was busy getting his affairs in order. He arranged his private diary of sonnets carefully, and then disarranged them to destroy personal meanings. The private Rosy Cross Press published it for the exclusive use of the heads of the Rosy Cross Masons. Finally, in 1766, the Mason George Stevens reprinted this Masonic secret book. Francis Bacon and the Prayer de Zion, Priory of Zion. The Grand Masters of the Priory of Zion during those times were Robert Fludd, 15, that's F-L-U-D-D, 1595 to 1637, J. Valentin Andrea, 1637 to 1654, and Robert Boyle, 1654 to 1691. The driving force behind what became the Royal Society, the British Scientific Society, were Robert Fludd, Robert Boyle, Wren, Ashmole, Locke, and Sir Thomas Moray. Interestingly, all of these men were both Freemasons and Rosicrucians. When King Charles II raised the Academie, which had gone through various names, the Gresham College, the Invisible College of Scientists, to its present status of the Royal Society, Francis Bacon was honored as the Moses, quote unquote, who had led the Invisible College through its wilderness. Sir Francis Bacon knew the Priory de Sion. He stayed according to a number of reliable historians. With the Priory de Sion's Grand Master to be Andrea in Berlin in the last years of his life, after faking his death in England, Sir Francis Bacon is widely known for his utopian book, The New Atlantis. I believe that's what I was talking about, that this was an experiment to come to the new continent here, the New Atlantis, you see. What is not widely known is that it was originally titled The Land of the Rosicrucians. I didn't know that. The concept of Atlantis has been preserved by the mysteries. Sir Francis Bacon and the other leaders of the secret societies in that day felt the New World held out best chances to create the New Atlantis. So that's what it was about. They wanted to make this the land of the Rosicrucians, or the New Atlantis, America. Sir Francis Bacon had played a leading role in creating the British colonies, especially in Virginia, the Carolinas, and Newfoundland. The British Masons, with the British Empire behind them, were entrusted with the plan to create the New Atlantis. Bacon's descendants moved to Virginia in 1635, where his descendant, Henry Blount, took the name Nathaniel Bacon. Nathaniel Bacon, a master mason, led a premature revolution called Bacon's Rebellion that prefigured the American Revolution. Very interesting. We're learning history and things here. This is important stuff, I'd say. You see, a lot of this stuff explains how we got to where we're at. Why were all these things created in Washington with on the ley lines and these Masonic lodges, etc., etc.? You see, now you'll have an understanding about what happened to America. What was this all about? Why didn't they want a king? Because, of course, it was their goal to destroy all monarchies, so they certainly weren't going to establish one here. So, it is true that the Freemasons served on both sides of the American Revolution. Naive people think that indicates that the Masons could have not had anything to do with the Revolution. On the contrary, the Masons were the primary instigators and leaders of the Revolution. See, so there it is, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I was saying. See, I didn't even need this book to tell me that. I was mentioning how we talk about the Bolshevik Revolution. We talk about the French Revolution. But when you think of the American Revolution, you just thought it was some men trying to get free from England. Well, see, that's a lie. You see that this is a plan of the devil. See, because you see what America, you're able to, what's wonderful is, you can look back at this now, but you can see America today. You can see that it is America that is bringing forth the Jewish world domination. You can see that clearly, that America is one of the biggest parts being used to accomplish that deed. Therefore, you now know why there was Masonic people here in the beginning. And Masonic Jews here in the beginning, funding it. There's a lot of people that try to say, oh, well, these Masons had nothing to do with it, like he said here. You know, they were a harmless book-reading society. They didn't do anything wrong. But now the Jews have got a hold of them. And so, no, it said right from the beginnings this stuff was going on. And so you should contemplate on what has taken place here. What is the purpose of America? If it's called the land of Lucifer, and the Pentagon, which is the upside-down star, which represents Lucifer, is the military base, I mean, things ought to start happening in your head. You know, when Iran calls America the Great Satan, I would say that they're not too far off the mark, because this is called the land of Lucifer. Now, however, the Father has plans for this land too, and his plans will supersede. But I'm just saying that the devil has used America, the devil and his offspring has used America to bring people back to the Stone Age so that they could give them democracy. See, in Iraq now, Iraq doesn't want the democracy. It hasn't been good for them. And America certainly doesn't like that, so I'm sure more people will have to be killed until they love democracy. So, it says here that the British Masons fighting the rebels actually contributed to eventual independence of the colonies, and did the secret societies in France and Germany, as did. So you've got Masons even overseas that were involved in this American Revolution. It was a big thing. The Masons claimed to know something about Sir Francis Bacon, uncovered by excavations done in Williamsburg, Virginia. A vault left by his descendants supposedly gives information about the founding of the United States. Some of Sir Francis Bacon's last words known to us, "I have held up a light in the obscurity of philosophy, which will be seen centuries after I am dead. It will be seen amidst the erection of tombs, theaters, foundations, temples of orders and fraternities for nobility and obedience. The establishment of good laws as an example to the world. For I am not raising a capital or pyramid to the pride of men, but laying a foundation in the human understanding for a holy temple after the model of the world. For my memory, I leave it to men's charitable speeches, to foreign nations in the next ages, into my own country after some time has elapsed." At another occasion, he said, "I go the same way as the ancients, but I have something better to offer than the morality dramas of the Greeks and the mystery ceremonials of the Egyptians." True, he gave part of the Masonic ritual, and much of it decidedly non-Christian. Two notable occultists that were frequently around Bacon, the Earl of Leicester, I think it's how you say it, who was Bacon's actual father, had as his physician the magician and Jew, Dr. Frederico Lopez. Again, Lopez. Now, isn't that one of the names you would see in South America? Yes, it is. See, there again, EZ at the end of the name. We have seen this just earlier, right? EZ at the end of the name. Christopher Marlowe described Lopez in a dramatization of his career in the book The Jew of Malta. Marlowe was stabbed to death after the book came out. Sir John Dee, who was another magician doctor, traveled throughout Europe and was the court astrologer for Queen Elizabeth. See chapter 1.11 about John Dee. The New Atlantis. Bacon describes the Masons in the New Atlantis. "Amongst the excellent acts of that king, one above all hath preeminence. It was the erection and institution of an order or society which we call Solomon's House, the noblest foundation, as we think, that ever was upon the earth." Again, the worshiping of a temple. Who is more important, the temple or the Father who is in the temple. You see, this is what's wrong with men. They want to worship institutions. They want to worship edifices. They want to worship wood, gods of wood and stone. They want to. It's very interesting to me. Everything but the Father. Things have changed, it says here. The idealism, charity, and integrity that characterized Bacon is notably absent today in the inner circle of the one world state power. Bacon was a philosopher, a man who for much of his life was not wealthy or exceptionally powerful. His life was in jeopardy a great deal of the time, although contrarywise, he and those who knew about his secret royal blood were more respectful, never knowing if he might be proclaimed king by his mother, the queen. When James I took over the throne from Bacon's mother, to protect his head, Bacon wrote a letter to King James I, delivered through the Secretary of State, renouncing any ambition to the throne and announcing his decision to marry a commoner. By comparison, those who are as prominent today in the one-world state as Bacon was then are part of a great, far greater power and have been corrupted by that power. Technology has made a one-world state much more ominous. It is possible that Bacon would be aghast at what the one-world state is going to be. And yes, I'm sure that would be true. You see, again, here is implied that technology, or electricity, which enables a technology, has made this a much more dangerous thing. Going public in 1717. In 1717, four lodges in London went public. To give the reader the frame of mind that the new lodges had, a quote from a Masonic book, Defense of Masonry, in 1730, is informative as to their view of antiquity. The system, as taught in the regular lodges, may have some redundancies or defects occasioned by the ignorance or indolence of the old members. And indeed, considering through what obscurity and darkness the mystery has been delivered down, notwithstanding the great rust it may have contracted, there is much of an old fabric remaining, much of the old fabric. According to the Christian researcher Edith Starr Miller, once Masonry was open to the public, it was to serve as the screen behind which a host of secret societies, whether theurgic or political, would operate clandestinely. Clandestinely. In other words, organizations like the Secret Palladium Rite of Masonry find it easier to function secretly behind the screen of regular Masonry. Masonry acts as a clearinghouse for many of the occult organizations. The center switchboard for the various types of Masonic lodges is the Alpina Lodge in Switzerland. The Sufi mysticism, which is Masonic theosophy, operates in cooperation with Freemasonry. So, you've heard of the Sunnis and the Sufis over in the Middle East, correct? Yes. And what I was talking about, these, what do you call them, Shriners, these are based on these kind of mystic orders. Believe it or not. I know it sounds crazy, and it is. So it says, the Sufi mysticism, which is Masonic theosophy, operates in cooperation with Freemasonry. Sufism has a species of Masonic or illusion, that's E-L-E-U-S-I-A-N, initiation, from the lower to higher degrees. The Sufi leader-to-be, who is considered the Messiah by the Sufis, is being helped by a select group, which includes several Masons, to be revealed as Lord Maitreya. Now, you've heard of that, Benjamin Krem, right? One researcher of Masonry offered his evaluation. The Masonic order usually draws its members from the leading merchants. Let me read that again. Are you listening? The Masonic order usually draws its members from the leading merchants. Who would leading merchants be? Yeah, Jews. And from the professions, bankers, doctors, and lawyers. Also Jews. They come to their meetings, they dabble in some charity work, and in general, they mark time until the day when they are asked to perform some unusual task for a fellow Mason, or for a national or world order. At that time, they finally realize that the blood oath does have significance, but by that time, it is usually too late. They may be asked to support a Masonic candidate for political office, to swing a business deal to a fellow Mason, or even to commit perjury or some other illegal act for a brother Mason. Even then, they are never offered any confidences. They are merely told what they must do, and they obey. Ex-Masons conform. Now, let me talk about this. Isn't it funny how I was talking about Judeo-Christians and how they don't think they don't have to obey because there's no law to obey. It's all been done for them. The obedience has been done automatically. But even these Masons have to obey. They don't obey Yahweh, but everybody has to obey in one form or fashion or another. Imagine these people believing this Jewish lie that, oh, you don't have to obey the Father. You don't have to love him or obey him. That's all been done. And no matter who you are, you're grafted in. The Prieurs de Zion and the Illuminati. In order to explain the connection, let us cover the structure of Masonry. One of the modern known groups of the Illuminati is also known as the Ancient Order of Oriental Templars, Ordo Templi Orientis. However, its own esoteric name is Order of Toav, T-O, then O-V. Its publication was The Equinox, according to The Equinox, Volume 3, Number 1, 1919. Well, I'm going to have to stop there because we're really at the end here. So what I'll do is we'll just stop right there. I am learning much here, I must say. That's, what page is that? 111. We made some ground there too, which is wonderful. I'm not going to say, we're not going to really read this whole book, but there's a lot in this book that needs to be read. And so we'll read the most important parts. But this is, so far, I find it very interesting that today we found out about Benjamin Franklin. It was something I had suspected. I'm not really surprised. It's just that very interesting. Well, I hope you're enjoying these shows. I hope you're getting the most out of it and learning about your enemy, learning about how history has tricked you, and that your frame of reference will begin to repair as you find the real truth about the matters of things. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.